Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 105? What episode is it?
Your show notes say episode 104. I don't know if that's correct or not.
Well, I mean, if my show notes say it, it's probably true. I'm your host, just like ever, Meek Spencer. Joined by my co-host, the man who taught Kobe Bryant how to dunk, Quentin Pierce.
Hello, everyone.
So, like, how does that work with you using a trampoline and him not?
Well, it's all about the physics, so I think I still conveyed what he needed to do very well. I mean, obviously.
So how much of, like, your baseball experience went into Kobe's dunks?
Virtually all of them.
Well, you know who is almost as sweet as Kobe Bryant dunks?
I believe that's going to be Oasis Games.
Oh my gosh, you're right. It is our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. You get 15% off of your first order at Oasis Games by using the code CCMTG. Is there any place on the entire internet that you think might be 15% cheaper than Oasis Games do?
I would very much doubt it, and I certainly don't think their quality is going to be as high if they are.
Yeah, like, if they are, it's because their shipping is bad, or, like, there's a problem, right?
Because I would assume.
Oasis Games is usually, like, on par with, like, the cheaper websites anyway, and they have the quality of, like, Star City and Channel Fireball. So I would assume that if you're getting 15% off Oasis Games, you're just getting the best deal you possibly could on the internet. It's not close. Like, even if you were to trade in your cards, I don't think that you're getting the value that you're getting from Oasis Games at that discount. So if you haven't checked out Oasis Games, do it. 15% off of your first order. I really do believe it's a killer deal, and I think that you'll like it. And if you do like it, you can always go back with Quentin.
We have another code you can use, and that is, would that be good? That gives you 5% off of your order.
So CCMTG 15, would that be good? 5%. No spaces on that would be good. And, you know, just check them out, guys. Like, we've gotten offers from other places to sponsor us. And our relationship with Alex, the owner, as well as, like, just the fact that it's just the best place I've ever bought Magic cards from, really does make it worth it to me. So I would highly recommend them. I believe Cube feels the same way.
Absolutely. One of the best ways to support the cast is to shop at Oasis Games.
Yeah, the other way to support this cast, which a lot of people did this week, is by becoming a patron of Constructor Criticism. You can do that by going to patreon.com/CCMTG. This is going to support us directly. This is putting money back into the podcast directly. This is something that's going to do things like, you know, we got a lot of, you know, I'm not going to spoil it yet. We got a lot of ideas to improve the Patreon this week. We'll get into that later in the podcast. But we just want to give shout-outs to the people who did that this week. Q, do you have that photo in front of you? Do you want to read off the first one?
Yes, we're giving shout-outs to new patrons, right?
Yeah, correct. The it's in the show notes. It's that picture.
Okay, so this first name's a little difficult. Sorry if I get it wrong, but we have Eduardo Zermino, or would it be Zermeno? I'm not exactly sure how to pronounce that last name.
I'm not sure the pronunciation. Regardless, thank you to Eduardo.
Thank you, Eduardo. Then we have William Reinhardt.
Whoa, I just asked you to do the first one.
Oh, I'm sorry. Am I overstepping my bounds?
Well, I mean, I wanted the easy ones.
William Reinhardt's just such a great name.
William is a great name, and we appreciate you too, William. I mean, next up we have Victor Blomquist. I can't ever say this guy's last name. But Victor is somebody that we've interacted with a lot on Twitter. And thank you, Victor, for joining us here. And then you can take the last one.
And then we have Marianne McDonald.
Yeah, so Marianne, we appreciate you as well. We appreciate everybody who can, you know, we understand that there are expenses in your life, and if you feel like you're getting value out of what we're doing on this podcast, and you can go to patreon.com/CCMTG and become a patron, it means the world to Quentin and I. We believe that what we've done and built on this has really helped a lot of people, and we hope that we can help you as well. And as we like to say, if you feel like you're getting a similar amount of value out of this to your Netflix account, go ahead, throw $10 up there, and you know, it starts at $1 and goes to any amount that you feel like we deserve. And we appreciate every penny, right, Q?
Absolutely. You have 4 patrons in 1 week is just astounding. So thank you guys very much.
Yeah. There's other ways that you can support the cast. Obviously, there's Oasis Games. Don't forget to check out the stream every week. It's the Think Twice stream. It's on twitch.tv/ccmtg. Hopefully, we meant to do this a few weeks ago. We forgot to do it this week because obviously we haven't streamed in 2 weeks, but there is now going to be, hopefully we can launch the YouTube, segment of the stream at the same time. We're going to look into that. We were going to do it actually 3 weeks ago, but it didn't work. So I totally forgot that YouTube just launched that streaming service. I believe it doesn't take any additional software. We can just launch it at the same time.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, so we'll be able to launch from two places. You'll be able to watch it from wherever you guys like. We'll check that out this week. Just I'll go over to Q's early, and we'll see what we can find out for you guys. So, Q, usually we like have all these great segments. We talk about like cards of the week, how we're improving at Magic, things like that. This week, it's a little bit different. Why is it a little bit different?
Well, this week is our Mega Rankings for Standard.
So what does that entail? Like, why do we do a Mega Rankings episode?
Well, it gives us an idea of how the metagame has been since the last Pro Tour.
Yeah, so what we like to do is 2 months after a Pro Tour, or 2 months after a set comes out, I changed it this time. What we did is we did it 2 months after the Pro Tour, or around that, and then we took every event since the Pro Tour. We could have done every event since the set came out, but I decided that since it basically was like two SCG opens in the Pro Tour, and those SCGs happened before the Pro Tour, it didn't give you guys the best information because it would have put like decks like Green-Red Devotion really high because that was just the best deck going into the Pro Tour, and that hasn't necessarily been the case since then. So I didn't want to just put Green-Red Devotion on, like at number one because it dominated so much because that's not just what's been going on since then.
So it's certainly not. The first 2 weeks of the format before the Pro Tour are quite interesting, but I don't think they really tell what the metagame is going to be like as a whole until you get great pros' minds into the mix and they figure out what the best decks are.
Right. So here we take, you know, a couple GPs, all the SCGs, everything that's happened since, you know, Pro Tour Origins. We're going to break down the top decks. Typically, we do the best five decks. But since we're only going to do Standard, and we only have two co-hosts, we're going to do something different. We're going to break down the top 10 decks, which in this case is the top 11 because one tied. The way this breaks down is every event has a scoring system. So the way it breaks down is top 32, if available, gets 1 point. Top 16 gets 2 points. Top 8 gets 3 points. Top 4 gets 4 points, 2nd gets 5 points, and 1st gets 6 points. This is based off of a scale thought up by Math Genius for Magic, Frank Karsten. And we've adopted that into our Power Ranking segment. We've adapted it a little bit and come up with something that we believe really helps the listeners break down a format and the real things that are going on rather than just looking at the top 8 decks. So, with that being said, so coming in at 10/11, what do we have, Hugh?
We have Bant and Blue-White Heroic.
Okay. So I combined these two decks. Interesting note, if I had not combined them, or sorry, if I had an additional one, we had a top 16 from White-Red Heroic. I felt like this was basically Mono-Red Heroic. Splashing for Team or Battle Rage. So I did actually feel like the deck was different enough to not include it. So, Q, what do you think of this Bant/Blue-White Heroic deck? Also, which do you prefer?
I would probably say the Bant deck, just because Dromoka's Command is great.
I think that the Bant version is just better. I almost feel like that splash for Dromoka's Command is basically free with Windswept Heath and Mana Confluence.
Yeah, I agree.
So what is how does this deck tick? Like, why is this deck in our top 11/10?
Well, I think that's because it has small windows where it can pick on the metagame. When there's a bunch of green rampy decks running around, this deck's going to prey on them. I mean, that is just such a rough matchup for them.
Absolutely. I mean, so the green decks are obviously one thing. What do you think of its position in, like, so we're not, obviously not going to spoil this, but what do you think of it versus, like, our other top 10 decks?
Well, I think for the most part, it matches up very poorly, and this is kind of what I would expect to see, that it's either offer list or at the very bottom. I think that Thoughtseize and removal is just a very good recipe to beat this deck, and that's the most important mix of spells you've got to beat in this standard format.
I mean, it's certainly not at the bottom, right? There were 28 different decks in this that scored points on this.
But that's why I said I would assume that it didn't make our list or be at the very bottom.
Oh, so you would still put it in the top 10?
I think I would have expected it, yeah. It was around enough that I would have expected it there.
Because the tenth best deck is very surprising to me, that tied it. And that's Abzan / Greenlight Constellation. Also coming, so they came in both with 14 points.
That is quite surprising. We haven't seen this deck do well in a long time.
I mean, it's got 14 points since the Pro Tour.
Hey, the math's not going
to
lie to us.
Yeah, I mean, the math's not lying. We just, it's one of those things where you don't really realize what's going on, I guess.
Well, and I suppose I do remember the tournament where it took second place losing to the blue-red mill deck.
Yeah, that was a GP.
Right, so that gives it huge points. I mean, this deck's very powerful. However, I think that it's just another deck that kind of fell prey to Dromoka's Command being really good against it.
Yeah, so one thing that I want to mention here is so some decks, you know, are just built, really built, like they're going to do this to put up a lot of top 32s and top 16s. So the way that this deck got its points was in one tournament it had 4 points, in one tournament it had 7 points, and one tournament it had 3 points. So out of all of the tournaments since the Pro Tour, it only had finishes in 3 of them. But in those finishes, it either had a lot of them in one of them, or it just had high finishes. And as in one deck.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that would make sense. I think this is another deck that kind of picks on a certain metagame. I think that the Constellation deck is actually quite good against Abzan control. You just have tons of cards that are very difficult for Abzan to compete with on a one-to-one basis.
I think that it's also the better version of Abzan against the Devotion decks. So one of the things that I was considering going into Proto Origins was actually playing an Abzan Constellation deck because I was like, well, if the best decks are Green-Red Devotion and Abzan, I think I'm a little bit favored against both those decks. What happened is that Abzan Rally did really well the week before the Pro Tour, and I don't think this deck has a great match against that.
I could definitely see that.
So what makes up this Abzan Rally deck, Q? Like, what makes it tick?
The Abzan Rally deck?
The Abzan Devotion deck. Oh my gosh. The Abzan Constellation deck.
Well, basically, your deck is set. Wow, now you're making me not be able to talk. It's centered around Eidolon of Blossoms. That's your main card advantage engine. And then, of course, you have Doomlake Giant to smash your opponent's board. And then just a bunch of value enchantment spells like, I'm brain farting on the Oblivion Ring. Excellent name.
Don't fart on the podcast, but it's called Banishing Light.
I will if I want.
Well, so what is it about, like, what is it that because you felt like Dromoka's Command was good against this deck. I actually don't feel that way, because unless you can generate a 2-for-1 somehow with Dromoka's Command, unless you have a creature that's bigger than their creature, which seems kind of difficult unless you're specifically killing Eidolons, I just don't feel like you can get a lot of value out of it because, like, they get to pick the enchantment that they sacrifice.
Yeah, I certainly can't speak too much from experience from that. I just assume that was the case. But decks playing Dromoka's Command are generally playing an Offenza and Siege Rhino, so I'd imagine it's pretty easy to find a creature that can kill one of theirs and make them sacrifice an enchantment.
That could be true. I assume that because you're good against the Dromoka Command decks, that wouldn't be the reason. I think that the reason is probably just how bad you are against one of our top decks, which is Red Deck Wins. I think you're just terrible against it, unless you're just playing green-white.
Yeah, that could definitely be a possibility, too.
So, well, coming in at number 9, which is only 1 point better than the other decks, we have Green-White Megamorph.
This deck's another interesting one. It was so popular for a few tournaments, and now it's just completely gone.
Yeah. So its point breakdown was two tournaments. It had four at one tournament and then 11 at one tournament.
Yeah, that's just insane.
Yeah, just like super popular at two events. One of them, I believe it had a top 16 and two top 32s. And then the other one, I believe, was the GP. I don't have that stat in front of me, but I'm pretty sure that's what the 11 point is. Making up 15 points from two events. I don't know about this deck. I do think that Death Mist Raptor, Den Protector is like the most underplayed thing in Standard to this day. But I don't know if this is the shell I wanted in. However, like, Ajani Mentor of Heroes might be the most underplayed Planeswalker of all time. And that's this deck, like, utilizes it to the very best.
Oh yeah, that card is so sick in this deck.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's one thing that, like, I've advocated playing it in the sideboard of Abzan Control for forever, and obviously it did Patrick Chapin, Owen Trentwald, Reed Duke, and Kiwi Jensen all played it at your Pro Tour. They played it in the sideboard, and I believe Patrick actually played it in the main deck. This deck just utilized that, Death Mist Raptor and Den Protector to the fullest. That being said, I don't know, like, what is this deck really good against? It's just the best Dromoka's Command deck, right?
Yeah, it probably is. I kind of been asking that myself, because I think that Abzan Control really smashes it. I mean, Languish and then big creatures and Elspeth are just super good against yourself. Like, what do you have against Elspeth?
I actually don't like Languish against this deck.
Really?
Yeah, because, like, so let's say that you Languish their board, and then it's, like, all they have to do is draw any more creature, let it either, like, a Hidden Dragon Slayer, another Raptor, or a Den Protector to just be right back in that game. Like, it plays four Den Protectors and four Raptors. I just feel like Languish is really bad against that kind of that combination.
See, I tend to disagree there. I feel like your job when you're playing Abzan is just to survive and cast an Elspeth or an Ugin, and then this deck can't win. I think Languish just buys you another turn, so I think it's serviceable.
So I think that if your plan is to cast Ugin, that could be true, but I actually don't like Elspeth against this kind of deck either. It's one of the reasons that I'm still on Teamer Megamorph, is because I just don't feel like Elspeth does enough against Raptor decks, especially not with Den Protector, because Den Protector ends up just killing the Elspeth.
Certainly Den Protector can be a problem. You do need to answer that card, but in my experience, you've had plenty of blockers that can beat a Den Protector in combat, and then I'm totally fine just sending tokens to chump Raptors.
Yeah. It's so interesting, because, like, I'm sure that once we get to, like, the top four decks, we're going to agree on everything, but I certainly don't think that... I actually think that this deck probably has a decent matchup against Abzan. Have you played against it a lot on Moda?
When it was popular, I played it against it a lot, and I certainly felt favored.
Interesting. So, like, the majority... I have never played this deck. I've just played a lot of Raptor decks, so I would just assume that, like, because of my experience with other Raptor decks, the Abzan is my best matchup. But, that being said, I could just be wrong. I mean, like, you're also playing Corsair of Kruphix, which, like, leads game ones to be heavily in this deck's favor.
Yeah, certainly Corsair can be blown out by Dromoka's Command.
It's interesting. I'd love comments from the listeners if they've played this deck. Or the Abzan deck to, like, give their opinion, because I'd love to know. Because obviously we're not going to get much... I mean, this deck's not seeing play again anytime soon, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah. I think that it's so bad against aggressive decks that you just can't afford to play it.
It's definitely possible.
So, now let's get to, like, the quote-unquote real decks. These are actually the decks that I believe are doing well in this format. Well, maybe not number 8, but I do believe that this deck has, like, seen more play because of, like, the deck that it is than it probably deserves. And that's Abzan Rally coming in at 8 with 17 points.
Yeah, this is the type of deck that I think if people don't show up with their hate, you're probably going to beat them.
I mean, it's so easy to hate it out, especially with, like, the one of the best decks having 4 NFNs in it.
Right. I mean, if Abzan aggro is dominating a tournament scene, then you are going to have a lot of trouble. There's a lot of decks with 4 NFNs in it. But that wasn't the case at the beginning of the format.
But this doesn't include that. Like, this is since the Pro Tour.
So, at the start of this format, Abzan aggro wasn't very popular.
Well, so, let's go back to the tournament after the Pro Tour. Our first tournament is GP San Diego. This is the tournament on August 8th where green-white was, like, the breakout deck, right?
Right.
So GP London the next weekend, the top two decks were Hangerback, Abzan, Mirrors.
Okay.
So 2 weeks after the Pro Tour, NFNs ruled.
Was it 2 weeks? I didn't think it was that quick.
It was 2 weeks after the Pro Tour.
Wow, okay.
So that's how fast this deck is. Yet it still comes in with 17 points. Does this mean that it can beat the hate, or does it mean that, like, it just dodged some hate? What do you think?
If I had to guess, I'd say that it probably just dodged some hate.
Because it has such a hard time with NFNs, right? Like, you have to take a whole turn off, which delays your combo, which gives them the turn. Because you have to remember that, like, they have to not have black creatures in play. Specifically that, for you to win. If they have one black creature in play, it just blocks your guy, and then your whole turn has to start over.
Right, and I believe Hangerback tokens can block your creature too, can't they?
They can indeed. I wasn't going to bring that up until the end of the segment, but yeah. So, like, Hangerback tokens or Hangerback Walker also can block it. So, like, you have a Hangerback Walker in play with two counters on it, you block their 20/20, and now you have two more blockers for it. I just don't understand how this deck could be good right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you.
That being said, let's say that Hangerback Walker is not printed. Do you expect this deck to be doing better?
Maybe a little. I still think NFNs is quite good against this deck.
Yeah, going into the Pro Tour, Eric Ciaz, he's a great guy. He's the host of the MTG Duos Spikes podcast. We were trying to help him with his sideboard, you know, because I'm a jerk and I didn't play that stuff with the guy before the Pro Tour. Totally my fault. And he had some Tormod Crypts in his sideboard, and I just recommended switching him out for NFNs. And he loved the idea. I don't know what his constructed record was at the Pro Tour, but I do think that, like, that switch probably might have, if he played against the deck, I certainly think it would have helped him out.
That's what I like doing. I like playing NFNs as it's serviceable against control, and, like, I guess maybe you can sight it in the mirror.
Do you have them in your board right now, Q?
I don't have them in my board right now. I mean, that's mainly because this deck's just not around at all.
Right, because other decks are pushing it out. It also has a bad matchup against Mono Red. We should note that.
That is definitely noteworthy.
That being said, it is something that if the tournament doesn't involve a lot of Mono Red or a lot of Hangerback Walker, it could easily take the tournament by storm, right? I mean, it's got some power behind it.
Oh, yeah. I think that Abzan Control is, I don't think it's favored unless you bring, like, Hollowed Moonlights or your NFNs. And then certainly, I think you were saying that Devotion was like a 50-50 matchup because you guys went off about the same turn.
Yeah, so Devotion's pretty close. That's what Sean McLaren and myself both came to the conclusion of. But one of the problems with it is that you have, like, you're not as consistent as other combo decks because you specifically have to draw a four of. I mean, obviously, like, the deck can just win by, like, grinding out with Raptors, but you're just not going to be favored against, like, a deck like Green Red Devotion with that kind of draw.
Yeah, this deck's a little perplexing to me. Like, it's a pretty fragile combo, but, I mean, like we're saying, if people aren't packing their hate, you can kill people out of nowhere, and there's not much they can do about it.
Yeah. So, I believe here's where we get to, like, the actual best decks in the format. What do you think, Q?
Yeah. I mean, the point totals don't really suggest that, I guess, until we get to, like, four.
Until we get to four. But here's the interesting thing, and here's a stat that I put in here. So let's say that Green-Red Dragons and Temur Dragons are included in either of these decks, because they're both similar archetypes. So let's talk about I'm just going to say what the 6 and 7 decks are. So the 6 and 7 decks are Green-Red Devotion and Black-Red Dragons. So these are the quote-unquote aggressive mid-range decks of the format that aren't out of Zen Aggro. So if you include Green-Red Dragons and Temur-like Dragons, so the Green-Red Ramp decks would make up 29 points. Or the Storm Breath Dragon decks would make up 29 points, which would both push it pretty close to the top 5. I mean, it would be in the top 5 for both these decks. So what's happening, I believe, with both of these decks is that they're sharing space. In fact, if you include Mardud, it might actually push black-red. If you include all the Stormwrath Dragon decks, it would put Stormwrath Dragon decks clearly at the number 4 spot. So, I mean, there's tons of things that could happen. What's happening, though, is that people are playing, because of the fact that there's 28 decks that occupied points in this, people are playing their favorite decks. Or one of the top 4 decks.
Right, I think that's what's going on, too. I think while it makes our job a little more complicated, I think it's just indicative of how great this format was. It's just like you can play this strategy that's similar only with, you know, your choice of colors, and it's still quite good.
Yeah, and if we, obviously, if we included, like, before the Pro Tour, Green Red Devotion would probably be in the top 4. And Black Red Dragons, like, would probably not be nearly as high because Abzan Rally would take its spot and things like that. But Black Red Dragons, like, really had an impact. Both these decks came in with 20 points. But, like, if people had made slightly different deck choices and just played one of these two decks, both of them would have come in with 29. And that they would have pushed the fifth deck out. What do you think about that, Q?
It's very interesting. I think it's just like I was saying before, and I agree with you. People just are picking what they like and going with it.
Yeah. Let's start with Black Red Dragons. Because as we noted, as I just noted, Mardu's not on this list. People have just cut white completely and just started playing Black Red.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I guess just going for consistency, I could also see it being because Haven of the Spirit Dragon is just that good, and it's pretty difficult to play that in a three-color deck.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Teemer, we've seen Mardu, we've seen Green-Red, we've seen Black-Red. Like, the Haven of Spirit Dragon decks, like, they're the real deal. And it makes you wonder if you want to play something like Green-Red Devotion, because it's so similar in a feel, right? Like, playing Green-Red Dragons is, like, just playing, like, I don't want to say more consistent, but, like, a different style of Green-Red Devotion. Green-Red Devotion, like, hits hard at the top, and, like, you're just, like, a little bit slower, quote-unquote, but a little bit more, you keep putting on the pressure, right? I actually, when I was I played Black-Red Devotion in preparation for this podcast, or Black-Red Dragon, sorry, and it did feel similar to, like, all of these decks, all of these Dragons decks are basically Green-Red Devotion with more removal is how they feel. Or they feel really similar to last year's Green-Red Devotion. So it's pretty interesting to me. You obviously haven't played a deck other than Blue-White Abzan or Blue-Black in 2 years, so.
I definitely have not played Blue-Red Dragons, Black-Red Dragons. But what I do notice about Black-Red, and I think the reason it's been so popular lately, is that you're playing a ton more removal than most other decks. And in a field that's mid-range, I think that's kind of where you want to be. You want to play some heavy-hitting flyers and just a bunch of removal spells.
So what do you think of my comment, though, about how these decks are, like, they have similar game plans to Green Red Devotion in the power you out plan? All of these Dragons decks feel like that to me.
Right. I certainly agree with that. I think the biggest difference, though, is the removal.
Right, because you get to play removal instead of just playing ramp and big things.
Right, exactly. And I think with Languish being in the format, that has really affected people's choices as well.
Yeah. I mean, looking at one of the Green Black Dragons decks, it plays as many as 20 spells.
That's a lot of spells.
Hey. This is almost a polar opposite, but it's winning in the same way, right? It's still winning in that power you out strategy. I mean, you could make that argument for obviously a lot of decks, but when I see a Teemer deck, or I see a Green Red deck, or even a Black Red Dragons deck, I just see a less powerful version, but more mid-rangey version of Green Red Devotion, and that's what Matt Kling was saying about the Teemer deck that I played qualifying for the Pro Tour. He's like, isn't this just Green Red Devotion with removal spells and some card draw? And I was like, yeah, it is. That's the idea. And that's exactly what I see when I look at something like Black Red Dragons.
It could certainly – I mean, I see that. And I think that that type of build is just much better against other mid-range decks.
No, certainly not against Abzan, right? Like, I'd much rather be on the green-red plan.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about Abzan control, I was more talking about Abzan aggro, though.
Oh, sure, yeah. Abzan aggro, I'd much rather be on Black-Red Dragons because, like, I have something to do against a Trindu Hangerback Walker.
Yeah, exactly.
So what do you think of Green-Red Devotion in this format queue? Like, obviously it does something, just like Black-Red, right? Like, you have a few options when you want to play big red decks. One of them is big red with Xenagos and what is her name? Sorry, she's a girl. The girl dragon that's an 8/8 or 7/7 or whatever she is.
Atarka?
Yeah, so you have Xenagos, Atarka, Crater's Claw. You're really big red, right? Or you even see that in rug dragons or, you know, rug decks. Or you have the other Stormbreath-y option of huge red decks with, like, black interruption. So where do you prefer to be on this scale?
Well, I think I do like black-red dragons, mainly for the reason that we were talking about earlier. I think that it has a lot more game against Abzan aggro. We did decide that green-red devotion, just the straight ramp-style deck, was fairly weak to Abzan aggro, right?
So I feel that way as a devotion player, but the Abzan aggro players disagree with me. They say they have a bad matchup against that deck.
Hmm.
I don't know how that could possibly be true, since I've never beaten a turn 2 Fleeceman Lion, turn 3 Anathenza in my life.
And Thoughtseize was quite decent against you as well.
Yeah, so like if they start off with a Thoughtseize, turn 2 Lion, turn 3 Anathenza, I don't know that anyone beats that draw, so I don't know that that's fair.
Maybe it's changed these days. The Abzan aggro deck is a little bit more lower to the ground.
No, I wasn't beating it before. They all say that they have a bad matchup against me, and I win all the game ones, but I never beat them after sideboard.
Well, I understand what's happened to you, but I was more just trying to think of it unbiased.
Sure.
But well, I honestly just don't know.
So we're going to take, like, some of my experiences out of it, right? But I don't know. So, like, let's look at it on paper. Do you think that going bigger – I mean, that's how Abzan Control beats it, right? They just beat Abzan aggro by going bigger than it. So you would assume that if they don't have Thoughtseize Lion into Anathenza, which actually just is bigger than everything and more disruption than anyone can handle, then you would think that, like, Green Devotion actually does have a good matchup against it.
That seems reasonable.
That being said, I don't know how that deck beats a Stormbreath Dragon either.
These days it's quite weak to it. You're not playing many Heroes Downfalls, if any.
So these decks could both have a good matchup against Abzan aggro, which is why they might be coming in at this slot, right? Where they, like, for example, I mean, just looking at the top five, we won't spoil what they are, but Green Devotion has 1, 2, 3 good matchups in the top five, but below that, I believe it has a bad matchup against Constellation and Heroic, and possibly against Megamorph too, if you're playing Course of Crucifix, which most of the Green Devotion players are, you definitely have a bad matchup against that deck.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And
so those decks could be keeping Green Red Devotion down. Where if you look at Black Red Dragons, I think it has a good Abzan aggro matchup. I believe it has a good Abzan control matchup. And I certainly believe it comes in really well against the number 5 deck, too. So it does well against the top 5 decks, whereas Green Devotion is good against the top 5 decks, but does really bad against the lower decks.
Well, it having a really terrible matchup in the top 5 is pretty bad for it, too.
Yeah, it has an almost unwinnable matchup in the top 5 for Green Devotion. So I do believe these decks occupy a similar slot in the metagame, which is why they occupied so much of this slot. I do believe that they serve similar purposes in, like, these big mid-range decks that have good matchups against Abzan control. I think that what these decks are trying to do is they're trying to attack different parts of the metagame while also beating Abzan control. What about you, Q?
Yeah, that makes sense to me. It's still a bit of a mystery to me as to why Green-Red Devotion is so hated out. Like, I guess it's reasonable that it's got such a bad matchup against one of the top decks.
Yeah, I think that its matchup against one of these top decks is going to be bad, and we'll get to that once we get to that deck. Let's go on to number 5, though. So coming in at number 5 was also a surprise for me. What about you, Q?
Yeah, I mean, it is pretty surprising. I assume a lot of it came from these past couple of weeks, though.
So let's take a look here. I think that you might be surprised by that, too. So I don't have these tournaments in order, but I guess the most recent tournament, it made up 14 points. So that's a lot of them.
That's the majority.
All right, so maybe I'm wrong, but it did score points in 4 out of 7 events. This is Esper Dragons. So, interesting note, if you include all control decks in this, it comes in with 38 points instead of 23. This would put the deck at number 4 instead of number 5. So, like, control decks are making up actually a large percent of this metagame, which people just don't account for. I feel like that's why control as well. It's because no one feels like they're going to play against a counterspell.
Yeah, that's kind of the notion that I've had recently, and that's been mainly the case online for me. But certainly when I've been going to PPTQs, I've been getting very punished for that.
Did you play the PPTQ this weekend?
I did.
How'd you do?
I 0-2 dropped.
QJ.
Yeah, both Matt Kling and I did that at the same tournament, so we're, it was
You played the blue blacklist we played on the at the during the stream?
No, I actually think I probably should have though, but I played Abzan.
Oh, I would have played the if I was at that tournament, I actually would have just played the same blue blacklist. I thought the deck was great.
I was so close to pulling the trigger because it was so much fun to play. I definitely should have.
What did Matt play?
Matt played mono red.
Okay. Wow. Weird. All right. So coming in number 5, we have Abzan or Esper Dragons. So I just want to talk about Esper Dragons first, and then I actually just want to talk about control in this format really quick.
Sounds good to me.
So Esper Dragons is the most mid-rangey of all control decks I've ever seen.
Yeah, this is a very different breed of control. But man, is it based around Ojutai, which is just quite the card.
Also, is it just a control deck? Like, it may be mid-rangey, but it is control all the way.
Oh, certainly. You're playing something like 6 counter spells, a million removal spells, and then a few dragons.
Yeah. I believe wholeheartedly that the rise of Esper Dragons is in part due to the fact that, like, I think Crux of Fate is back up. I think that no one is ready for a counter spell. And I do think that Ojutai is just insane. Ojutai sees a lot of play at our number 2 deck as well, and we'll talk about that. Man, Esper Dragons is like, it's the sweetest control deck I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I love the look of the deck. I love Ojutai and I love Salamgar. It's a sweet deck. I think it's actually quite good right now, too. I think the biggest thing for me with the deck is that Salamgar is just so well positioned right now. It's so good against Hangerback Walker.
Drifting Death, you mean?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, for the listeners.
My bad.
I knew what you were talking about because I was on the stream with you.
And show all the listeners should have too, right?
Well, we'll let them we'll give them an earful when we get to the shoutouts and stuff like that. But I agree with you. I think that counter spells are great right now. People aren't ready for them, and I think that even like something as simple as 2 blue. Pay 1 is, like, too much for people to handle right now. Like, they're just tapping out for everything.
Yeah, even the Abzan aggro deck is not playing mainboard Thoughtseize. So I think that Esper Dragons is extremely well-positioned right now.
Yeah. That being said, other than right now, like, this is obviously the whole format since the Pro Tour. Esper Dragons and Blue-White Control and Blue-Black Control. Is Clash of Wills, like, a real thing, dude? All of these decks seem to be playing one or two of them.
I certainly think so. I believe Gerard was playing 2 or 3 this past weekend, and he topped 32 the SCG with it. I think the card's good. That type of effect is serviceable, and then in a metagame like this that's very mid-rangey, I think it's quite good.
Yeah, and like a metagame where they're like, they want to play. It's so weird how like games don't start until turn 3 right now.
I mean, we've got a bunch of Scrylands and Siege Rhinos. That's kind of how it works.
Yeah. And, like, with, like, your tap lands, like, Clash of Wills just blows you out. So I think the blue control is doing better than a lot of people realize, and I think that's why people why it's doing so well. I think if people play like when we're on the stream, we think about Clash of Wills right away, right? Like even if we see a blue, white, red Triland, the Monastery, what is it called?
Monastery, is it Temple?
No. The blue, white, red one is called Mystic Monastery.
Mystic Monastery.
So, like, we've had times on stream where we see Mystic Monastery into Fetchland, and Q and I are like, well, we need to play around Clash of Wills here. Like, that's how good that card is. And I believe it. I believe it wholeheartedly. Also, the fact that Jeskai decks also play it, too. Like, we've seen one or two of those in Jeskai decks as well. Just means that, like, Clash of Wills is making a real impact, which is something that we said going into this format, right, Q?
Yeah, certainly. I thought it was going to be a big player.
Yeah, not as big as I thought it would be. I actually thought it would shift the meta away from things like Abzan Control. It didn't do that, but man, is it good against that deck.
That we may see that here in a few weeks, because I really do think Esper Dragons is poised for a comeback.
All right, well, let's talk about the number four deck. I included every version of Red Deck Wins. This is Tarka Red, Mono Red, Red White Aggro. Every deck that's like mostly red, I included in this. This comes in at 36 points since the Pro Tour. Man, Q, you thought this deck was dead. This is way more points than you probably would have guessed it had.
Yeah, the deck continues to do well. I think that's probably because I underestimated how good Abbot of Carol Keep actually is. And then you just combine that with much reach that it gains from Exquisite Firecraft.
I'm going to do everything I can to convince you to play my deck at the RPTQ that has Abbot of Carol Keep in it.
All right, sounds good.
I'm telling you it's good. Like, I've played like 100 games with it. I believe Abbot of Carol Keep is going to break Modern.
Interesting, okay. I've seen a lot of people testing with it in various decks.
Yeah. That being said, this Red Deck Wins deck, I have played it, and I think it's like the sweetest Red Deck Wins deck of all time.
It's certainly sweet. Man, it's got a ton of reach, and then it's got a card advantage engine too. That's just kind of scary.
Yeah, like Exquisite Firecraft, and it's got Stoke the Flames, and Abbot, and Monastery, or Swift Spear. Is it Monastery Swift Spear?
That's right.
All right. Clearly, you've been podcasting too much, and I'm forgetting the names of the card. But yeah, Monastery Swift Spear, tons of one drops, Founder's Tree Denison, Zergo, Lightning Berserker, crazy magic card. This mono red deck is the real deal.
It's also a mono red deck that dodges mass removal.
Yeah, something that's crazy about this deck is the fact that it can just, like, Lightning Berserker hit you for 5, Lightning Berserker hit you for 5, and you're like, well, I just can't beat that with, like, these stupid -2/-2 sorcery speed, like, wrath effects.
Right.
So things like Drowning Star aren't that great against it, and you really want things like Ultimate Price.
Farika's Cure is right. One of the cards that I've loved.
But at the same time, one of the other decks that's doing well is a Tarka Red with Abbot of Carol Keep. So the one of the reasons that the red deck does so well is because it splits, right? There's the token version with a Tarka's Command, and then there's the regular mono red version that doesn't play the widespread with Dragon Fodder and Hurtling Outburst. So it makes red decks even better because there's two ways you can go with it, and they're so different in the kind of sideboard cards you want for it.
Absolutely. If you don't have Drowning Sorrows against a Tarka Red, you're probably going to lose if you're playing Abzan.
So, how do you plan for that?
Well,
what cards do you play that are good against both decks?
Well, Bile Blight is still very good against both of them, so I try to play more of those. But honestly, yeah. I just try and...
Hold on. I want to jump in on that.
Okay.
I believe that main deck Bile Blight is the key to being good against this deck and Abzan aggro.
That's why I've been playing 2 in my Abzan control list, so okay. I agree with you.
Yeah, so I just wanted to make sure that, like, we indicate, like, how important that is. So what was the other cards that you're playing to be good against both versions of Mono Red?
Well, I was going to say that I don't do that for the most part. I try and play some more Bile Blights, so I can be better against them, but I try and guess which one people are going to play. Certainly if people are going to play a Tarka Red, I'm going to bring my Drowning Sorrows, but if they're going to play... the more straightforward mono red with just Abbots and Burn, I bring Surge of Righteousness for Abzan and like Farika's Cure for blue black.
What do you think of Irration Cleric? I think it's good against both versions.
Yes. I mean, certainly it's much more well-rounded than Surge of Righteousness.
Yeah, that's what I would be doing, because, I mean, I build my sideboard so that I'm very, like, open-ended. I have as many sideboard cards for as many matchups as possible. One of the problems with that is obviously you don't always have enough cards to take out, but
right.
I do think that Irration Cleric Bioblight is the way to beat both these decks at the same time.
I could definitely see that. The reason I have been playing Surge is because it has great splash damage against black-red dragons.
Yeah, it definitely does. I was just about to say, but that card is pretty good against basically every card in black-red dragons but Stormbreath Dragon.
Right.
Okay. So, what do you think right now? Do you think that, like, fourth place indicates how well this deck is, how good this deck is, or how well it's doing?
I think probably both. I mean, man, it took down the Pro Tour. That was before these power rankings started, and God, it beat
dominated
the crap out of me.
The Pro Tour.
Yeah,
it dominated.
It certainly did. I think this deck is, like you're saying, it's just great. Like, it's one of the better mono red decks we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, it's funny. When I talk with Matt Kling about mono red, he thinks the best mono red deck he ever saw was in the Cobblade era with, like, Plated Geopede, Goblin Guide, Lightning Bolt, that deck. I actually think the mono red deck right before that with, like, Hell's Thunder, Hellspark Elemental, Ball Lightning, Lightning Bolt, that deck Splash for Blood Right Up. I think that was the best mono red deck I've ever seen. I think this deck could compete with either of those decks on, like, how powerful it is in their respective metagames.
I could certainly see that. And I, just for the record, I believe I agree with you on this subject. Man, that Hellspark Elemental red deck wins deck would kill you so fast.
And there was nothing you could do about it, because, like, they all died next turn, but, like, well, how do you stop a 6-1 trample? How do you stop a recurring 3-1 trample? How do you stop a 4-4 flying trample? Like, that deck was crazy.
Yeah, it had a lot of powerful cards
in
it.
And yet it also still had Lightning Bolt and Goblin Guide.
Right. Yeah. Just insane.
And then sometimes it played Bloodbraid Alpha and turned 4 and you hated your life. Because, like, why do they get that flood insurance? Yeah. But I think that Abbott does a similar thing to that, right? Where Abbott, like, provides you flood insurance. It's still pretty good on turn 2, right? Like, the number of times that I played this deck where I was like, I'm just going to gem this Abbott on turn 2 because, like, it's going to be a 4-3 next turn. They can't stop that.
Yeah, well, I think the biggest thing for me is obviously Abbott, but the fact that it has two 4-damage burn spells in it is something that have we ever seen that before?
I mean, obviously, like, when we talk about Hell's Thunder and Bolt Lightning, it was very similar, right? Those both were 3-mana, 4-mana, 4-damage spells easily.
Sure. I don't know. One of them is uncounterable, though, so this one just feels a little bit different. I don't know.
I mean, the uncounterable thing is annoying, but, like, I do think that it's similar to the Ball Lightning, Hell's Thunder aspect. And obviously, this deck doesn't have Lightning Bolt.
Right. Lightning Bolt is, like, the definition of reach, for sure. But also, I mean, the way that it's mana efficient with Stoke the Flames, too, like, God, that card has just been crazy.
Yeah, I'm not sure, and obviously, like, Lightning Berserker, when we haven't talked too much about that card, but that card is, like, might be the best 2/3 I've ever seen in a mono-red deck.
Yeah, it's amazing when it does you, like, 7 damage. It feels
you're like, yeah, you're like, Wrath your board. They're like, alright, Lightning Berserker dash, hit you for 4, and you're like, why is that back in your hand now? So, I'm a pretty big fan of this. The version I've been playing is actually an Atarka version. I believe that, like, a sweet middle ground between these two decks is just something that people aren't ready for.
I think so, too. I think you can really shock a metagame with this deck. It's really cool that you've got two different versions.
Yeah. Coming in with 47 points, the red deck came in with 36, we have Abzan Control. I'm not gonna lie, man, like, I didn't realize that this deck was so low on this totem pole.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that the aggro version has just been more popular, so that's probably why. But it coming in at third is certainly surprising to me.
I mean, the number 2 deck is just the most surprising thing on this list.
I agree with you. I would have expected control to be either first or second.
Yeah. Yeah, Abzan Control did not score points in only one of the tournaments. So there was one tournament where it didn't even have a top 32. But it's just like Siege Rhino, Nissa, Sorin, Elspeth, right? Like, these cards in combination is just super powerful.
Yeah, it's your Thoughtseize deck of the format. It's going to grind you out with a little bit of card advantage and 1/4 removal spells, and then your Fabled Siege Rhino.
So, Q, I want to talk about this. I don't know that we've actually ever done this, and we might never do it again, but I want to talk about, like, there are other constructed podcasts. Well, the one that I'm thinking of specifically, one of the co-hosts really doesn't think that Nissa's that great, but you actually, it's your favorite card in this entire deck. And it's my favorite card in this entire deck as well. What do you love about this card?
Well, I love that on turn 3 it's plenty fine. It finds you another land and can block in a pinch, or can, you know, get points of damage in.
Can we just mention how great just it being a Borderland Ranger is? It finds you your fourth land to play your Siege Rhino if you don't have it. And then it just kills like their best two toughness creature against the aggro decks.
Right. And unlike Borderland Ranger, it's a threat that they have to deal with eventually because it's going to grind you out.
Right. And if they don't kill it, unlike Borderland Ranger, like Q says, it's a threat. It's going to flip. And then, like, it's going to be a 4-4, and then it's going to be card advantage. And then those aggressive decks don't have a way to win. So I'm with Q. I think that this card is fantastic as far as Nissa goes. And I think that it made this Abzan Control deck a lot better.
I very much agree. I can't imagine why you wouldn't like this card in this deck. Maybe this player has a different experience than me. But yeah, even it's crazy how late in the game, too, that on turn 8 or whatever, you play it for 3 mana. It's just this powerhouse of a card. You can play that and then like play the Siege Rhino that you drew or the Hero's Downfall that you found. I've had some crazy turns, too, where I was able to play an Ugin in a turn early and steal wins that way with this card.
Yeah, where you flip it and then plus it and it puts land into play, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of this deck. I'm on the opposite side of Q. Like, he still likes Course of Crucifix. I would just play this deck with Raptors and jam it. But I think this deck is great.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's certainly your 50-50 deck. You've got a ton of play with the deck, and then you can build it to beat whatever metagame you'd like.
Q, what do you think is the best card in Abzan Control? I mean, you want to say Siege Rhino, but you also don't want to say Siege Rhino.
I mean, I think it's Siege Rhino. I really do. That card is just not real. It's modern playable. It's just insane. I think it's close second is Abzan Charm.
That it's card closer is than it should be, right?
It is. The thing that pushes Siege Rhino over the top for me is that it's just good against everything. There's not one deck where you don't want to draw Siege Rhino, and there are some decks that you don't want to draw Abzan Charm, which is basically just red deck wins.
Yeah, Abzan Charm, though, man, if you're not playing against mono red, it becomes the best card in your deck.
Yeah, it's probably, well, I don't know. Even in the mirror, I'd probably rather draw Siege Rhino than an Abzan Charm.
So if your opponent has another Siege Rhino in play, you would obviously rather have your own Siege Rhino. But if you both have a Siege Rhino...
Well, the thing is that...
I think that the thing is, for me, and then you can go into what you were going to say, I think that Abzan Charm pulls you ahead in every matchup. More like, unless you get that third Siege Rhino, I think Abzan Charm does more to pull you ahead.
Yeah, my thoughts on Abzan Charm is that you want it to find the most amount of Siege Rhinos that you can. I mean, in the mirror, if you cast 3 Siege Rhinos to your opponents, 1 or 2, you're probably going to win. That's just kind of how it goes.
Man, can you imagine if Siege Rhino was a 4-4 instead of a 4-5?
It would still be good, but...
But the card would be completely different.
It'd be very different.
Man. And man, aren't you glad that Spencer told you to play Sorin in your Abzan deck, and now you win all your Abzan mirrors?
Sorin is quite good in the mirror.
Let's talk about the number 2 deck, the one that surprised both of us. Jeskai. What the freaking heck? This is crazy to me. So I'm going to read you the point totals. I don't have the tournaments that these occurred at. I was going to do that, and then I, like, did the stats the wrong way. Hashtag could be better on my part. Let's go in here and look at Jeskai. Jeskai, the exact same tournament. So, fun fact, the same tournament that Abzan Control didn't get any points in, Jeskai also didn't get any points in.
Interesting.
But it beat it out by 1 point. Its point totals were 7, 15, 4, 5, 5, 10, 2. QJ, this is Casey's deck. Like, Casey's not here to talk about it, but man, does this deck have a good green-red devotion matchup.
Oh yes. And I think, actually, it's better than Abzan Control when they're head-to-head these days, too. I think Jace is just that good.
You think it has a good Abzan Control matchup?
I think so.
I feel like Siege Rhino just, like, does so much work in that matchup.
Yeah, but then they wreck you with an Ajutai's command. They counter your Rhino and then bring back a Jace that you killed, and you're just like, oh, man.
So my two least favorite cards, we'll talk about this now. So I want to talk about, obviously, as you might guess, the number one deck is Abzan Aggro. So I want to talk about Hangar Backwalker really quick. So the decks that Hangar Backwalker has seen play in this top 11 is Abzan Aggro coming in at number one, Jeskai coming in at number two, Abzan Control coming in at number three, Control decks coming in at number five. It has not seen playing Green Red Devotion or Mono Red. It has seen playing Black Red Dragons. It has seen playing Abzan Rally. It has seen play in Megamorph. It has seen play in Bent Heroic. It has not seen play in Constellation. This means out of all of our top 11 decks, it has seen play in 8 of them. What the freaking heck?
Yeah, it's quite the versatile card when it comes to deck building.
I'm going to go on my goodbye rant right now. It is the most annoying card Wizards has ever printed. People on my Twitter feed today compared it to Thragtusk when I talked about how much I hated it. No, this is far more annoying than Thragtusk. You actually had to play a specific color to play Thragtusk. You can actually just play Hangar Backwalker in any freaking deck you want because it's good against aggro, it's good against midrange, it's good against control, and it's colorless. Congratulations, you have a good magic card. Good job, Wizards of the Coast. You printed a good magic card for colorless mana. Good job. Can we please ban it now? I'm freaking done with it. If I have to see this card for another year, I might never play Standard again. I hate this card. This is my least favorite card ever printed. Like, the amount that I hate things like Ojutai's Command and, like, these stupid white cards, like Hero of Bladehold is, like, my other least favorite magic card of all time that are only good against, like, green ramp decks. And that's it. Like, this card is 10 times worse. Only because there's no cost to playing it. Somebody else was, like, was comparing this to Mutavault, and I was like, there's a cost to playing Mutavault. You're playing a colorless land in your deck. What's the cost of playing Hangar Backwalker? Do you know what deck has played Hangar Backwalker the most in our top two decks? Both have played Hangar Backwalker the most. That's Jeskai and Abzan Aggro. Is this a correlation to?
I definitely believe it is.
Sorry about that. No, Jeskai is crazy. It's a Jace Hangar Backwalker deck. And then it goes into things like Rabble Master if you want it, or, like, think about this. Oh my gosh, I'm going on tilt. So, like, it's a three-color Hangar Backwalker deck that its third turn play is a hasty, flying, vigilant creature. What decks is this not good against?
I don't think there's one.
It's good against every freaking deck. Like, you cannot construct your deck in a way that you, like, they don't get value out of you killing their 2-drop, and then they have this insane 3-drop that's good against everything. So obviously I don't like Jeskai. Q, what are your opinions on the Jeskai deck?
I actually quite like it.
You like Jace, though.
I love Jace. Jace is one of my favorite cards in a long time. Wow, it is quite the card.
Do you like Jace or Nissa better?
I probably like Nissa better because I played with her more. But I don't know, Jace is super close. I just really like these Planeswalkers that they printed for this set.
They're very interesting. I also like Chandra.
I like Chandra a lot.
Liliana probably has a lot of space behind her. We haven't seen a lot of Gideon, but that doesn't mean that it won't happen.
Yeah, I think that will change. I quite like Jeskai. I think Mantis Rider is a cool card.
If cool means it's good against Spencer decks, then you're right.
It is good against Spencer decks.
The thing about this Jeskai deck is, let's look at the top decks. So, Bant Heroic. I do believe that you have pretty good game against that deck. Constellation. I think they're too slow for you. Green White Megamorph. I think this might actually be a bad matchup for you. I think Dramoka's Command is probably pretty good against you, because it out-tempos you. Abzan Rally. I think Abzan Rally actually does have a good matchup against Jeskai. What are you about you, Q?
I'm not sure. You might be able to just clock them fast enough with a Mantis Rider that they don't really get to do anything.
No, because I think they go off around, like, turn 5 or 6, and you're not ready to kill them yet. Because they don't play things early enough that you care about, right? Like, if they play a Satyr Wayfinder, are you going to kill that with your Lightning Strike?
I could be wrong.
Yeah. So that's my thought. Black Red Dragons. I think Storm of Dragons are really good against you, so it could be hard. But, I mean, they have a lot of removal. I think the Black Red Dragons might be favored. Green Red Devotion, you're going to crush it with Jeskai. Red Deck wins. So this is something we talked about last week. We're not sure who's favored in this matchup.
I've heard a lot of Jeskai players saying that they don't like the matchup, and that's probably because you're just set up to be crushed by burn spells.
With Jace.
You definitely don't want to be playing Jace or Goblin Rabble Master against that deck.
Esper Dragons, Jeskai's super favored.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And now you're saying that you think that Jeskai's favored against Abzan Control.
That's what it's felt like to me. I definitely have a losing record against it. So,
yeah. I would assume that it also has a great matchup against Abzan Aggro. This puts Jeskai in a pretty great place.
Yeah, I would have little to no idea about Abzan Aggro.
So, I mean, Jeskai, basically just ban Hangar Backwalker is all I have to say about this format. Forever. In fact, I'm going to make a pledge. I will rip up every Hangar Backwalker I open for the rest of this format. If I have to go buy 4 Hangback Walkers just to rip up the rest of them that I open, I'm fine with that. I hate that card. I hate it so much.
Yeah, I hope Wizards can find a way. Maybe they'll sneak in a card in the set that closes it a little bit.
Yeah, Sweet Charm, like exile target enchantment, do any other relevant, or exile target artifact, do any other relevant ability. In fact, just make it like every single color has that card. Red has exile target enchantment, deal 2 damage to target creature or player. Green has search your library for a land card, put it into play tapped, exile target artifact. Then we have blue, draw a card, exile target artifact. All of these cost 2, by the way. Black has target player discards a card, exile target artifact. You know, all that cycle. I'd be okay with that cycle.
Seems fair.
Yeah. I mean, it's broken, but like, so is Hangar Backwalker. All right, let's talk about the number one deck. Q, Hangerback Abzan.
Yeah, it was not close. It's almost double what our number two spot was.
So Jeskai had 48 points. Abzan had 47 points. And then our number one deck had 86 points. Hangerback Walker that good?
I mean, probably.
That's the only change to this deck.
And I think this is probably the best home for Hangerback Walker 2. You're playing with Anafenza and Dramoka's Command, and man, those cards really beef that card up.
I hate this deck. I hate everything about it. I actually haven't played Standard in 2 weeks. More than that. The last time that I played Standard was that PPDQ that we both went to, that you took 9th and I took 10th or 11th.
Right.
That's the last time I played Standard, and I will not play it again until rotation. I hate this deck. I think it is unfun. I think the amount... I played against Hangerback Walker round 1 against Blue-Black Control with Waste Knot. Round 2 against Hangerback Abzan. Round 3 against Mono-White Devotion with Hangerback Walker. Round 4, I played against Hangerback Walker. And round 5, I played against Hangerback Walker. How fun do you think this tournament was for me?
You didn't look like you were having fun.
I wasn't. It was the least fun tournament I've ever played in. I hate Hangerback Walker. I hope that the card gets banned. I hope that as many people hate it as I do, because I think that it's unfun. I think that other people will come to the conclusion I have, that it's just stupid that every deck gets to play this card. Like, it's Thrag Tusk times a million. Now you talk about why it makes this deck good, and I'll just shut up.
Oh, man, but it's entertaining to listen to you.
I hate it. Just talk about it. I don't want to talk anymore.
Yeah, I think this deck has done well just because it's just doing something very powerful, very fast. You get to play turn 2, 3, 3, and then turn 3, 4, 4, and then a Siege Rhino, and, God, you just crush people at that point. You're playing a ton of the best cards.
You missed the turn that you play Hangar Back Walker.
I was trying to leave that out for your sake. But no, you get to play...
The deck is obviously good, right? Like, obviously we've heard a lot of the turn 2 Fleece Mainline, turn 3 on Offenza, and, like, this is the deck that does it. And then, like, after you've done that, and after you've decimated your opponent's board by them dealing with these two creatures, you just play Siege Rhino.
It's usually good enough, especially with how removal's a little choked right now. Heroes Downfall and Abzan Charm are the go-to removal spells for that, and they're also kind of your only option to kill the rest of their threats, too. So this deck's very good at choking your removal in that way. And it's got great card advantage and solid removal. It's playing Abzan Charm on its own. Then you're playing with Hangarback Walker, and that has a lot of hate against basically everyone. I really don't think it's that great against Abzan Control, but certainly against Red Deck Winds and a Control deck, that card's great.
I mean, and it's great against Black Red Dragons, it's great against Green Red Devotion, it's great against Blue, I mean, Bant Heroic, like, that's just, it's colorless blockers.
Oh yeah, definitely the hate for God's Willing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just good against too many decks and can be played in too many decks. Can you taste my hatred for this card?
I mean, I can taste it, feel it, hear it, all of it.
It's funny because, like, the last card that I hated this much was, like, years ago in Herald of Bladehold. I hate this card more than I hate that card.
This really? You hated that card that much?
Oh, I mean, Herald of Bladehold is basically the only card I ever lost to playing green-red ramp.
Okay.
That and Infect, because you couldn't beat that deck.
Sure.
With the
Wolf Run deck?
Yeah, thank you, Wolf Run ramp. So, like, the decks that I lost to were Infect. Zombies was a terrible matchup, too, to be fair. And then every deck playing Hero Bladehold. You actually can't beat a Hero Bladehold. That's impossible. So I hated that card a lot. But you know what? Even the amount that I've beaten Hangarback Walker is actually more than I've lost to it. But it's just the most annoying card. Why do I have to deal with this? Why is my opponent's 2-drop so annoying?
Yeah, I do think it's rather unfortunate that they printed a card that can go in every single deck like this.
Yeah. And that makes it, I don't want to take away from, like, how sweet is it that, like, there are two very different Siege Rhino decks in this top three?
That is very cool.
Yeah. That being said, there are 28 different decks. I'm going to go ahead and read them really quick for you, Q.
Okay.
Green Red Devotion, Esper Dragons, Abzan Control, Abzan Aggro, Jeskai, Red Deck Winds, Green Red Dragons, Blue-White Control, Mono-White Devotion, Red-Black Dragons, Blue-Black Control, Blue-Red Thopters. This, I believe Blue-Red Thopters actually would have come in next with 11 points. Constellation, Abzan Rally, Mardu Dragons, Jeskai Tutelage, Elves, Bant Heroic, Green-White, Blue-Red Mill, Sultai Control. That would have put two more decks. I didn't even include that in the control decks. Naya Mastery. Abzan Bad Cards is what I put down. Blue-Red Bad Cards I also put down. These decks also. Jeskai Ascendancy Combo and Teemer Dragons.
Yeah, I think this is just evidence that this standard metagame, for the most part, has been quite great. I mean, just look at the diversity there.
Yeah. So blue-red bad cards was actually just blue-red control. And then Abzan bad cards was a Hooting Mandrill's Gormag Angular Delve Abzan deck.
Matt Kling.deck?
What?
Matt was really high on this deck at one point. I was giving him crap for it.
Oh, all right. Well, I mean, I'm always down for giving Matt Kling crap. But yeah, I think that it's pretty evident of, like, how this format turned out. Let's talk about, let's just, for the last couple minutes, let's talk about, like, our goodbye to Standard. Anything stand out to you since the PTQ in this Standard format?
Well, things that stand out to me, I would say that it's really cool that Blue got its time in the sun. I didn't think it was going to happen, so I'm very glad that it did. I think that's mainly because of Jace, and I'm very much okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, two of our top five decks were Blue decks.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of tough because I think Blue is just changing a lot. There's lots of creatures that are good to play in Blue, and that's not something that I'm very used to, but I think it's fine. Jace is very sweet. Mantis Rider is sweet. Ojutai is sweet, so I'm definitely okay with it.
Yeah, something that stood out to me since the PT, other than the fact that I hate Hangaback Walker, is just like, man, was Siege Reno good all year?
Yeah, Siege Reno was your go-to creature.
So, is there anything that you wish you would have seen in this format that you don't think that you saw enough of?
Well, I think, I mean, I'm always going to be cheering for a traditional control deck to be in the format. So that's definitely something that was a little different for me. That's why...
You literally played a traditional control deck at the Pro Tour.
Well, I mean, we're talking about since you're a Pro Tour, so this is what...
No. This is... So that was my question since this Pro Tour. I want to talk about this entire Standard.
Oh,
so
sure.
Since Cons of Tarkir came out, is there anything that you wish since Cons came out that you would have seen more of?
Well, I'm still not convinced that the deck I played at the Pro Tour was a playable deck. So
you day two'd with the deck. with a winning constructed record. I literally played one of the best decks that you could play in constructed at the Pro Tour and had a losing constructed record.
It happens. I don't know. I'm quite happy with this Standard format overall. I would say this last part with Hangerback Walker is my least favorite part of it, but
everything else was awesome.
Yeah, I think it's been great. I think things have been changing pretty constantly for the most part. I am a person that enjoys playing with and against Siege Reno, but I can very much understand people that don't. But I mean, I think it's been cool. There's tons of playable decks.
So you're not answering the question. What is something you wish you would have seen?
That's what I'm trying to reason through, and I can't really think of anything.
There's not a deck that you like wish you could have built or like played.
Not really, man. I was actually quite happy with the Standard format. I feel like there was kind of a bit of everything.
Sure. So for me, this question. Sultai Charm and Mardu Charm, just like the two charms that I do feel like are actually the best charms that just didn't see enough play. I think that those charms were like the most powerful, but also the colors, like the Sultai deck didn't really fit with Sultai Charm. Like the Sultai deck that saw the most play was the deck with Sidisi. Didn't really want Sultai Charm in that. And the Mardu deck saw play for, like, a hot minute, and then just never saw play again. And it didn't play Mardu Charm. And, like, Mardu Charm, in my opinion, is, like, the second best charm behind Sultai Charm. And I really wish that, like... So, one of my favorite decks, and I actually believe this deck is good in this format right now, is what I call Mardu Charms. It's Kolaghan's Command, Mardu Charm, and then... what's the name of the card that... They sacrifice their highest toughness creature.
Crackling Doom.
Those three cards together are great in this format. Good against every deck. You have Flame Slash, sacrifice your biggest creature, which kills what's his bucket, and then Lightning Bolt plus kill Hangerback Walker. Like, that deck seems great in this format. And it's one of the my favorite decks that I've played in this format. I wish I would have seen more of that kind of stuff. But yeah, that's what I wish I would have seen. Obviously, I wish I'd seen more Rug. I can't complain about it, though, winning a RPTQ with it, so. Should have played that deck at the Pro Tour queue.
The Rug deck?
The Rug deck that I was like, play this queue, and you were like, I'm going to play Blue-Black.
No, I'm happy with my decision. For my first Pro Tour, I think it was a solid deck.
I'm just teasing you, man. Alright, so next we have any cards that you expect to see more play in the upcoming season that didn't see play this time. Guys, I'd just like to start off with Wingmate Rock.
I think that card is criminally underplayed at this point.
Yeah, and then obviously the two charms I talked about. What about you, Q? Anything else stick out to you?
I would definitely like to see more Crackling Doom. I think that card's sweet and great.
Yeah. Crackling Doom is great. I think that, like, most of the Seadrano cycle, like, was criminally underplayed, right? Like, Sidisi is a great magic card. Butcher of the Horde, great card. The Teemer card, the Savage Knuckleblade, I can speak from experience, that card's really sweet.
Card is sweet and very good, I just think it's a great magic card.
Yeah, so something that I think that we will see coming up, I think we will see four color mid-range decks in the next format. And we will see some sweet, like, one thing that I expect is something like a Ferocious deck that has both Savage Knuckleblade and Passenger in it. Or, like, a Siege Rhino deck with Butcher of the Horde in it. Like, those kind of decks. And I'm excited for that.
It definitely would be sweet. One thing I can say is that I do expect to see a lot of Abzan still. I think it's here to stay.
Yeah. I don't see three-color Abzan, but I do see Abzan splashing red or blue.
It's definitely possible.
I think the mana will be better in four-color decks than three-color decks for a little while.
It's definitely possible.
So, stay tuned for that. Let's talk about our sponsor really quick, Q. What's up with that?
Our sponsor is Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamesslc.com. Great store, great prices, and they always have great stock.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of cards that Oasis has in stock is crazy. Like, Q, why don't you talk about that for a second?
Well, my favorite thing about Oasis is that they have everything in stock. I can go in with basically any deck, hand it to them, and a few minutes later, they bring it out to me.
You walk out the door.
Right, exactly. That's just something that I wasn't used to growing up. Even in the last, 6 years when I first started playing, I had to travel to, I think it was four different stores to get my playset of Jace the Mind Sculptor. And then to assemble any deck, man, I would have to put in tons of hours and lots of driving to go find anything. But now it's just a one stop for me, and that's something that I'm not used to, so it's really great.
Yeah, I'm a huge, huge fan of Oasis Games. I mean, as long as ownership stays the same, I'll always be a fan. Alex is a great guy. They're going to always have cards in stock for you. If you haven't checked them out, you're a fan of this podcast, 15% off is a pretty good deal. Go check them out. The code is CCMTG at checkout. You're going to get 15% off your order. You're going to get a great deal. Go buy your next standard deck next season with that code. I think that you will be quite happy with the shipping time, free shipping in the U.S., things like that. So, Clan, QJ, what's up with the Clan?
We have a Clan on Magic Online. If you'd like to join and jam some games with our fans, please message me. My name is Earthstripe, URTHSTRYPE.
Yeah, you can also message me, Spencer13H, or Dev, sorry, Spencer13Dev. I am usually on Mondays. I did not play this week on Monday, today. Today is Monday. For those who are listening, it's Tuesday, but or whatever day it is for you. I didn't play this week because, man, I hate Standard.
Yeah, Standard's growing a little old for me as well, so my NTGO time is starting to fall a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not sure. If I had a Modern deck, I'd just jam Modern games. Maybe I'll borrow a Modern deck. That sounds fun. But yeah, message us, we'll hook you up, we'll put you on the Clan, and, yeah, more things to come from that once the next thing that comes up, the Patreon viewer, you can become a patron. Q, so this is changing, So everybody that signed up in last week, we really appreciate it. Dude, we're pretty excited about the changes and, like, the things that we want from this. What's something that we're doing to improve the Patreon right now?
Well, you want to start talking about some ideas we have for goals?
No, I'd like to talk about the contest. So one thing that we're doing right now is we're actually running a contest. So we want to make the Patreon as awesome as this podcast. We believe this podcast is great. We're always doing what we can to improve it, and we want to do the same thing with the Patreon. We launched the Patreon a few months ago. People were pretty happy initially. We got great responses. But we want to make it for you guys. So whether you're a patron or not, we want you to either email us in at ccmtg.info.com with your feedback for what you'd like to see from the Patreon that would help you become a patron. Or on the Patreon, if you can comment whether you are a patron or not. There's a thread that you can comment on to give us your ideas. And what we want is we want feedback for what you guys want. We want to know what you guys want from this service, and we want to improve in that area to give us the best shot at becoming one of the great podcasts. We believe that what we're offering is, I mean, I believe that it's the best podcast. I believe that what we offer is better than everything else out there. And I'd like that to be reflected in our listener base. And I'd like that to be reflected in the amount of money that we're bringing in from the patron. And the best way that we know how to do that is by taking the feedback that you guys give us and applying that and making that awesome. So go ahead and shoot us an email at ccmtg.info@gmail.com or leave a comment. And the best feedback that we get, the one that we feel like we get the most from, we're going to ship $100 store credit to Oasis Games. This is going to be a big chunk of your change for your next standard deck. So go ahead and give us some input, and we're going to ship the best feedback some money. And that just shows to you guys how important it is that we make this awesome for you. Q, how important is it that this is awesome for our listeners?
I mean, it's kind of the biggest goal that I have on the podcast right now is to make sure we get this Patreon right and the way that people like it. So that's why we're chipping out a lot of in-store credit, because it's kind of what we want most right now out of the podcast.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. There are two things that happen with this. One of them is you guys get to experience the awesomeness of Oasis Games, and you guys get rewarded for telling us what you want, because that's how improvement happens. We can't be awesome unless you guys help us, because we need to know what you guys want. So check us out. You know, check out the Patreon page, and let us know what you guys are thinking. Q, what is hashtag Would That Be Good?
Hashtag Would That Be Good is our Twitter outreach program. If you have a question about Magic or life in general, go ahead and shoot it to Twitter with the hashtag Would That Be Good, and one of our fans or one of us will answer it for you.
Yeah, this can be any question. You know, doesn't necessarily have to be about Magic. I've answered questions about glazed donuts, inside of ice cream, grilled cheese, lots of grilled cheese questions. You know, all kinds of things. So let's start. We have four this week. One of them is mine. We'll get to that in a second. We have setting fitness goals at the same time as Magic goals. Hashtag Would That Be Good. At John Kerry, at Spencer13H, at Quentin Pierce, at Shaq. So I don't know much about John Kerry other than the fact that I didn't vote for him. Because I thought he was a fool. What about you, Q? What do you know about John Kerry?
I don't know anything, really.
I wasn't old enough when John Kerry was running for president. I was just kidding. I was 15 years old or something. You might have been old enough, though.
That'd make me 17, wouldn't it?
You weren't old enough yet.
Yep.
Man, I don't know. Like, I think that it is great to set any kind of goals that you have for yourself. As long as you're improving, that's what's important. Eggby, I said that I would do this with you. I kind of want to buy an elliptical, actually. I went to play basketball today, and I left my pump for my basketball at the basketball court. I had a flat basketball, so I couldn't play basketball today.
Dope.
But yeah, I'd love to, like, get an elliptical, play basketball every day, lose some pounds that I get from drinking. Because I think that, like, having a healthy lifestyle actually does just make you better at Magic.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I think it's really great
I think these two things do work in tandem. I know that I play a lot better Magic when I feel good, and that means that I've been eating well or, you know, I'm in decent shape, so I think this is great.
That being said, my last two PTQ wins did both come off of a Red Bull, but man, did those tournaments go late. It's not my fault.
Well, I mean, you can make healthier choice than that, but that's neither here nor there. Well, I'm going to that later.
QJ, what do you recommend for me?
I would recommend basically anything than energy drinks. Anything at all. I think even like the 4-hour or 8-hour energy drinks or whatever they're called are much better because they're just based on B vitamins, whereas Red Bull and Rockstar are just concentrated crap.
I mean, but they taste a lot better than 5-hour energy.
I mean, I'm not going to dispute that at all.
Yeah, that could be a good idea, though. I hadn't thought about that. So, like, 5-hour energy, if you're a Magic player, might be better for you in the home run stretch, you think?
I haven't done enough research in it, but I would say probably, because it seems like they're just a bunch of...
I mean, if you shoot it, it's definitely better, right? Because it goes into your system at the beginning of the top eight, which is when I drank those Red Bulls.
Well, I was more just talking about that I don't think they have toxic chemicals in them like regular energy drinks do.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, you're the health expert. I only drank those Red Bulls because I was falling asleep.
And I've certainly done stuff like that before, like on road trips. I'm like, well, I'd rather not get in a car crash and die, so I guess I'll have this energy drink. But use them very sparingly.
Right. But I would love, Eggbeat, to set fitness goals with you or with any of the listeners. I invite you guys to set fitness goals with me, and I'll see if I can oblige. Like, I'm pretty overweight right now, considering, like, what I looked like when Quentin and I met. So I'd be happy to do anything that you guys want to do if it's something that fits my lifestyle. So let us know. I mean, I think that it actually does improve you as a Magic player to, like, eat well. So
I certainly agree.
Do you think that the new Gideon would make black-white tokens viable again in Modern? I actually think both new Gideons might be great in black-white tokens in Modern Q.
Yeah, I certainly could see that. Man, that new Gideon is excellent.
Yes.
I also think that the first Gideon is, I mean, it's just waiting for a home.
Yeah, so like so I think it's Kithian is the name of the creature.
Like, right?
Yeah, so Kithian plus Zendikar Gideon plus Elspeth plus the basis of a black-white tokens deck, I do actually believe might be a real thing.
I could certainly see that.
Yeah, I don't think this is off by any margin, Jason. So, you know, ship us a list and ccmtg.info@gmail.com. I'll ship it to Q and we'll both give you feedback, man. But, man, I think that, like, a split between that and Elspeth. Can you imagine having Elspeth and that Gideon in play at the same time, Q?
That would be quite the beating.
So, yeah, man. I think that could be the real deal. Just drove 3 hours to play in a PPTQ. I need to spike this tournament. Hashtag, would that be good? Obviously, if you tried 3 hours for a PPTQ, I hope you did well. Apparently, he did not. Lots of mana problems for Bodhi there. But, Q, what do you think of his dedication to drive 3 hours for a tournament?
And that's pretty awesome. I don't think I would do that myself, so props to you, Bodhi.
Yeah, Bodhi. Congratulations, man, on just, like, your dedication to the game, dude. So, I mean, unfortunately for us and fortunately for us, we have a PPTQ every weekend. But, man, good. Congrats on, like, just getting out there.
Yeah, not everybody has a sweet life where it's every Saturday 20 minutes away.
Yeah. That being said, though, we don't have SEG IQs or SEGs.
That is true.
So, that awkward moment when you miss the word sacrifice, hashtag, would that be good? Cute. Did you see this tweet?
I did, and this card changes a lot when you read it like that.
So I'm going to read the card the way I read it, okay?
Okay.
It says, spawning bed, land, tap it for one colorless, or six, tap it, put 3/1/1 Eldrazi Scions in the play that have sacrifice it and add one mana to your mana pool. What the heck? That card's broken!
Yeah, that card's quite good.
Yeah. 6 mana to put 3/1/1s into play every turn. I mean, it's technically 7 because you have to have this land, but, I mean, that might be, like, the new control finisher for UQ.
Oh, yeah, that would be... I'd be all over that noise.
But it doesn't do that.
So, I was actually wanting to talk about this. I am way more frustrated with the Eldrazi lands being terrible than I am with the man lands being worse.
I mean, so the man lands are bad. Are the Eldrazi lands actually that bad?
I think they're flat unplayable.
But I think that they're for limited.
Why, though? The Eldrazi lands were so sweet before.
So I don't know why they printed that new Eldrazi bad, terrible rare land instead of just printing Eldrazi Temple. I don't know why they did that.
Did you see the Ugin land?
That card is good.
That card's good?
Oh, very good. Did you read that card?
Yes.
Oh, man, we're going to have a sweet set review then.
Oh, man, I think it's awful.
Maybe I need to read it again. Hold on.
Well, you misread this one.
All right, I'm going to read it again because I think it's the last card spoiled. Oh, no, there's a ton of cards spoiled. All right, so Sanctum of Ugin. You can tap it for a colorless, or whenever you cast a spell with converted mana cost 7 or greater, you may sacrifice it, this land, and search your library for any colorless creature card revealed put in your hand. How is this card bad?
Ugh. I mean, it's just not... I have Ugin. I have
it Ugin's doesn't speed. Ramp you, but it's insane. It's a free tutor.
It's not really a free tutor.
It's free. It's free. It's slightly win more, but it's free.
So the reason I have Ugin was sweet is that you just generate a card advantage. This one, you have to have a big, dumb creature
it
in your hand.
It doesn't generate card advantage. You have to sacrifice a land for one card.
What? No, I was saying I have Ugin actually generated card advantage.
No, it... What?
Eye of Ugin, the where you could search.
I know. Do you not have to sacrifice Eye?
No.
Oh. Well, I'm wrong. I'm wrong about so many things in my life.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's going to be playable, but I am just very disappointed with those ones. I think the Manlands are fully fine and are going to see plenty of play, and I'll enjoy playing with them, but I just don't see those.
I don't think the Manlands are fine at all. I think that they're, like, actually actively bad. And every person, so like the thing that people are like, if you're expecting modern playable lands, like obviously you're going to be disappointed, but it's like, of course I was wanting modern playable lands, where else do I play man lands right now? Like if these are built for standard, that's fine diddly dandy, but like I want a blue-green land for my blue-green modern deck that turns into a creature just like I have one for my red-green deck and my blue-black deck. And... maybe not my red-black deck, because, you know, that one's not exactly modern playable. But, like, is it too much to ask for, Q?
It may be. I mean, if you had lands that were that good in this standard format, you might have problems.
Well, that's easily solvable by just reprinting Wasteland, Q.
Well, that's going to create a whole lot more problems. I don't think that's a great option.
QJ, shout-outs, go ahead.
I think I'm going to give a shout-out to Austin Goltz again. He beat me in the first round of the PPTQ this weekend. And
crushed you into the dirt!
Yeah, it was pretty bad. He crushed me bad. So I think...
He listens to this cast, too.
I believe he does. So shout-out to him. He got me, and I had it coming.
You deserved it, Q.
I think I did.
All those times you beat him...
I felt bad, man.
You felt bad beating him, or you felt bad losing?
No, I felt bad beating him, because it was like every time, like every tournament everywhere, we would end up playing in our winning end, and I beat him like a lot of times in a row, so I felt I was
frustrated. You.
Yep, so awesome job, man.
Yeah, shout out to Austin. He's a great guy. Any other shout outs from you, Q? Your Packers won, man.
I was very much expecting that. Bears just aren't a football team.
All right.
And when have they ever had a decent quarterback in the last few years?
So is Casey going to text us to let us know if he won $100,000?
He better. And he better, like, take us out to a nice dinner.
I want steaks.
Me too.
So Casey played in the DraftKings tournament this weekend. He played in one that the first place gets $100,000. And he drafted my boys Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski, which if you didn't watch football this week, you might not know that they had an insane weekend. Yeah, so shout out to Casey for, like, having a winning strategy there. But I have a few shout-outs this week. I wanna shout out Manny Merez. Looks like he might be moving soon, and, like, big step for him and his girlfriend. Man, dude. Shout out to everybody at Oasis Games for just being so awesome with us lately on this podcast. I don't know when the last time you went into that store is. You might just have like a bajillion $D save up in store credit.
Not anymore. I have cashed them out.
All right. Well, regardless, they've just been super awesome with us lately, and I just want to give a shout out to everybody at that store. And then I'd like to give a shout out to the listeners of this podcast for the feedback that you guys give us. Something that's important to me is that even when you guys give us feedback that you hate something or that we're doing something wrong, is that Quinn and I take it with what you guys are trying to say. We're never going to tell you guys that we're not doing something that you say or that we're doing, because we want to improve, and we're going to think about what you're trying to say. Whether it's a bad thing about us or not, we always want to be improving. And you guys do that for us a lot. So I just want to give a shout out to everybody who's ever given us feedback and helped improve this podcast, because it means the world to me, as it makes it a lot easier for me as a host to know what you guys want and to know what you guys are looking for. When you guys say things like, man, these stupid goodbye rants are the worst. It just gives a negative connotation at the end of the podcast. Please stop doing them. It's pretty easy to just be like, all right, man. Like, that's pretty easy to quit. So thank you to everybody who gives us feedback. If there's anything that you guys don't like, let us know. We're always here for you. And shout out to Casey Bloodworth for beating me 170-something to 84 during the first week of fantasy football this week.
That's kind of a domination.
Dude, he had the most points by far on our, like, 170 points?
That's a lot.
I had like, the third most points with 80-something. And he crushed me. He crushinated me. QJ, you going to go teach Kobe Bryant how to dunk?
That's my day job.
All right, man. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you all next week.
Bye, everyone.
Magic.